The Braille Monitor, Volume 65, Number 10, November 2022, Gary Wunder, Editor. Distributed by email, in ink print, in Braille, and on USB flash drive by the National Federation of the Blind, Mark Riccobono, President. Telephone 410-659-9314. Email address nfb@nfb.org. Website address http://www.nfb.org. nfbnet.org. http://www.nfbnet.org. NFB Newsline information 866-504-7300. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/National Federation of the Blind. Follow us on Twitter at NFB_voice. Watch and share our videos, youtube.com/nationsblind. Letters to the President, address changes, subscription requests, and orders for NFB literature should be sent to the National Office. Articles for the Monitor and letters to the Editor may also be sent to the National Office or may be emailed to gwunder, G-W-U-N-D-E-R, at nfb.org. Monitor subscriptions cost the Federation about $40 per year. Members are invited and non-members are requested to cover the subscription cost. Donations should be made payable to National Federation of the Blind and sent to National Federation of the Blind, 200 East Wells Street at Jernigan Place, Baltimore, Maryland, 21230-4998. The National Federation of the Blind knows that blindness is not the characteristic that defines you or your future. Every day we raise the expectations of blind people because low expectations create obstacles between blind people and our dreams. You can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back. The National Federation of the Blind is not an organization speaking for the blind. It is the blind speaking for ourselves. Each issue is recorded on a thumb drive, also called a memory stick or USB flash drive. You can read this audio edition using a computer or a National Library Service digital player. The NLS machine has two slots. The familiar book cartridge slot just above the retractable carrying handle and a second slot located on the right side near the headphone jack. This smaller slot is used to play thumb drives. Remove the protective rubber pad covering this slot and insert the thumb drive. It will insert only in one position. If you encounter resistance, flip the drive over and try again. Note: if the cartridge slot is not empty when you insert the thumb drive, the digital player will ignore the thumb drive. Once the thumb drive is inserted, the player buttons will function as usual for reading digital materials. If you remove the thumb drive to use the player for cartridges, when you insert it again, reading should resume at the point you stopped. You can transfer the recording of each issue from the thumb drive to your computer or preserve it on the thumb drive. However, because thumb drives can be used hundreds of times, we would appreciate their return in order to stretch our funding. Please use the return envelope enclosed with the drive when you return the device. Volume 65, Number 10, November 2022, Contents. Illustration: Presidential Release on the Road in Mississippi. A Joyful Tribute to My Friend by Grace Anderson. Anonymous Monitor Article. The Clay Vessel by Caroline Benavides. Benetech recognized with a grant to continue its ongoing work on behalf of the blind. A Report from the Advocacy and Policy Team by John Perret, Jeff Kalock, and Justin Young. Time to Start Planning for the 2023 Washington Seminar by Kyle Walls. Creating Content with Accessibility as the Default, Celebrating Drupal's Olivero Theme and Calling for More Blind Contributors by Mike Gifford. Is It Respectable to be Deafblind by Rocky Hart. She Fought on Behalf of Her Blind Son by Ali Markovich. Challenging Expectations, A Partnership with Vispero, School, Work, Home by Patty Chang. Owning Your Creative Content, Cryptocurrency, Accessibility, and the Organized Blind Movement by Suman Kanunganti. On the Road to Independence, How My Seeing Eye Dog Allowed Me to Gain a New Perspective on Life by Ojan Kakonli. The Honor Roll Call of States by Bridget Burke. Monitor Miniatures. Presidential Release on the Road in Mississippi. Four photos appear on the page. Photo 1, the caption, LaShawna Fant and Mark Riccobono smile with Jackson chapter member Bula outside her home. Photo 2, the caption, Multiple staff members and students from Mississippi and Oklahoma pose with Mark Riccobono, Pam Allen, and LaShawna Fant in the Mississippi School for the Blind Auditorium. Photo 3, the caption, Mark Riccobono poses for a picture with LaShawna Fant and Al, a member of the NFB of Mississippi Jackson Chapter. Photo 4, the caption, Mark Riccobono and Jackson Chapter member Barbara Hadnott stand in her home in front of a stack of donated bottled water. First Vice President Pam Allen and President Mark Riccobono traveled to Jackson, Mississippi for the monthly presidential release live to kick off Blind Equality Achievement Month on October 1. The community of Jackson has faced difficulties resulting from the water crisis, and we have mobilized to help. Thanks to the generosity of our National Association of Blind Merchants, President Riccobono and Jackson Chapter President LaShawna Fant distributed water to 18 members' homes, and there is more available for any blind person in the Jackson area. Members also picked up water at the presidential release location, and others can connect with Dr. Fant to learn more. We also worked with Uber and Lyft to provide transportation credits to chapter members to offset transportation costs related to getting what they need during this time. Thanks to both companies for lending support to blind people in Jackson so they can receive equal access to vital community services. Thank you to NFB of Mississippi for hosting this month's release. If you know a blind person in Jackson who is in need of water, please connect with the Jackson Chapter at nfbms.org. A Joyful Tribute to My Friend by Grace Anderson. Two photos appear on the page. Photo 1, the caption, Grace Anderson. Photo 2, the caption, Joy Harris, October 9, 1951, June 20, 2022. From the editor. I don't think there can be any higher tribute than someone who thinks back on your life and their first reaction is to realize the positive way in which you have been a part of theirs. Grace Anderson is the secretary of the National Federation of the Blind of Alabama, a position she could never have envisioned holding before she met with someone who was able to recognize and then cultivate leadership of a kind that Grace never thought possible. Here is what she has to say about her dearly departed friend, Joy Harris. The definition of joy is a feeling of great pleasure and happiness. That's what my friend Joy Harris brought to me and to so many others with whom she came in contact. She never met a stranger. Joy had a way of seeing leadership potential in blind people even if they couldn't see it in themselves. This is certainly true for me and my story. I first met Joy in October of 2014. I had recently moved to Alabama from a small city in northwest Georgia and was having trouble adjusting to my new surroundings in a metropolitan city. Though I didn't realize it at the time, I was also lacking confidence in myself as a blind person. I was extremely shy. Joy would often say to me, "Speak up, Grace. They've got to hear you. Speak up." All that changed the more time I spent with Joy. She helped me find my voice and realize what I had to say mattered. I wouldn't be the woman I am today without her influence. I also wouldn't be in the Federation had she not introduced me to it. Joy taught me so much in the 8 years I knew her, not only about the Federation, but life as well. Throughout the years I knew her, she battled cancer and was on and off chemo. Even on her worst days, she never complained. When I asked her how she was, she would often say, "I'm fine. Don't worry." At times, I would push further and ask, "Are you sure? You know you can tell me if you're not." Then she would say, "I'm just tired," or, "I'm a little sore." Joy always put the needs of others before her own. I can recall the many weekends I would spend with her at her home. In the days leading up to my visit, she would always ask me to send a list of snacks I would like to have while there. I would tell her, "Don't worry about me. Whatever you have will be fine." However, she would always insist on me sending the list, so I did what I was told. During the last few years of her life, she would often have to rest more and be in her bed the majority of my visits. She would often say, "I'm sorry. I know this weekend hasn't been very fun for you with me having to lay around a lot." I would tell her I was having a great time and I wouldn't want to spend the weekend any other way. I cherished each weekend I got to spend with her. If she wasn't up to sitting in the living room, I would just hang out with her at her bedside and tell her the latest news of what was going on with work, family, and the NFB board meetings. If I didn't have anything exciting to tell her, we would just make up stories. Joy loved the Federation with all her heart. So much was this so that she told me if her memorial service fell on a day of an NFB event, I better be at the NFB event. Luckily, there was not an event the day of her service. Joy's dedication and leadership in the Federation were very refreshing to me and something I'd never seen before. She possessed two leadership qualities that you usually don't see together. She knew thoroughly how to support someone in a major leadership role, and if there wasn't anyone willing to step up to the plate, she'd do it herself, even though she preferred to be the behind-the-scenes girl. She served as president of our Alabama affiliate from 2011 to 2018. During that time, she invested her time making our Alabama affiliate better. Prior to her stepping into this role, she noticed there was a lack of unity and leadership in the affiliate, and she was determined to do something about it, and do something about it she did. During her years as president, the Alabama affiliate became unified. She was never afraid to share her opinion, whether it be good or bad. However, she would do it in a way that was respectful. She possessed the perfect balance of knowing when to crack the whip and when to show the softer, gentler side of herself. When she was presented the Jacobus Tenbrook Award at the banquet during the 2018 convention, she was rendered almost speechless. Rarely have I seen Joy speechless. This lady had a very distinctive voice and loved to talk. She didn't need a microphone to get her point across. Joy was often making what she referred to as good trouble and made it her mission to teach me how to make good trouble as well. She would always tell me, "Grace, you have to pick your battles." And pick my battles I have. When I was in the midst of a battle, who was right there to lend a helping hand and lend a listening ear for my venting? Joy. She helped me persevere and surmount any obstacle I faced. When I felt like giving up, she would say, "You got this. I believe in you." And if that didn't convince me, she'd pull out her secret weapon and tell me, "Do it for me, Grace. Just do it for me." How could I say no to that? I feel Joy not only prepared me to be a leader in the Federation, she also taught me how to continue the work of the Federation when she was no longer around for me to call upon. I recall one day I was at her house for a weekend visit, and she did what she did best and provided me with some encouragement about how to overcome my latest obstacle. I told her, "Joy, I don't know what I would do without you, and how am I ever going to go to a national convention knowing you won't be there to go with me?" Her response was, "You will be fine, and you are going to national convention." When the day finally came and I heard Joy had passed, my heart was broken. I had planned to come visit her 4 days later. Instead, I was attending her visitation and memorial service. In the days leading up to her service, I was overwhelmed with the outpouring of love I received from my Federation family. The phone calls and text messages I received reminded me I was not alone, and I had a whole bunch of family standing ready to lift me up and do whatever they could to help me. All I had to do was call upon them. I am forever grateful to have each and every one of you, my dear Federation family members. Our 2023 convention in Houston, Texas, will be the first national convention I attend without my friend Joy at my side. While there are days I think, how am I ever going to get through a convention without her, what keeps me going and what will help carry me through is the promise I made to Joy during my last weekend visit in February of 2022. I promised her I would continue to carry the torch and positively affect the lives of blind people I come in contact with, as she has done for me and countless others. In closing, I would like to say that not a day goes by that I don't think about and miss my friend, but the memories we shared and the impact she made in my life as well as the lives of so many others will carry me through. Joy's final words during her banquet speech when receiving her Jacobus Tenbrook Award were, "I dearly love the Federation, and as long as I'm here, I'll be with my Federation family and will always answer when called upon." I am proud to say she did just that. May we all take this page out of Joy's book and stay true to the Federation, no matter what trials may come. Anonymous Monitor Article. From the Editor. Occasionally, we run something that is so sensitive and private that we will do so anonymously. When we do, you can be assured we know the author and can vouch for what is being said. Such is the case here. The issue described is one all of us must take seriously, for it threatens serious medical care at a fundamental level. Here is the article. I'm a woman in my late 30s. I was born blind, developed diabetes in my 20s, and last year my husband and I were diagnosed with unexplained infertility. What's unexplained infertility? Great question. I'd love to tell you, but I can't. From my perspective, it's just another thing that my body can't do. It's the most primal of functions that seemingly comes easy to everyone else in the world except for me. I'm used to coming into unfamiliar life spaces. As a blind woman of color, it doesn't faze me when I hear the, "We've never had a blind person do this or that thing before," or, "Are you sure you're in the right place, sweetie?" or, my favorite, "Who's going to help you?" My skin has grown thick against these low expectations, so I don't know why it surprised me to face huge amounts of ableist treatment from the fertility experts I trusted to help make me a mama. I am a grown señora. I manage a career, my finances, a household, and many other aspects of life as anyone else would. So why, as I am redressing after a very invasive ultrasound, is a nurse squatting down in front of me insisting on putting my feet into my underwear? I was beyond mortified and beyond angry. I was also afraid. If this nurse doesn't trust that I can put my own clothes on, is she going to flag my file to social services because she assumes I can't possibly raise a child? Am I being watched? Would the fertility clinic purposely botch our treatments so I can't conceive because they don't believe I should? A few days later, during a video appointment to go over results of the genetic tests we took, we were offered the option to edit out any broken or abnormal genes, including blindness. I cried so hard after that meeting. My husband tried to reassure me that maybe they offer this to everyone. They gave us waivers to sign declining the genetic manipulation of our future baby, and I thought we were done with that conversation. I eased into treatments as calmly as one can when trying to balance expectations, hopes, odds, costs, medications, and timing. Since the cause of our infertility is unexplained, this means that we had two options. The first is known as IUI, or intrauterine insemination. This is where sperm is inserted into the uterus with a catheter. It is a minimally invasive procedure. The second is known as IVF, or in vitro fertilization. This is a more involved procedure where eggs and sperm are joined together in a laboratory and then implanted back into the uterus. IVF is also where they would do their edits. We opted for the IUI. Walking in for our first cycle appointment, I was a ball of nerves. Thankfully, the staff at this location was minimally thrown off by my blindness, and we quickly developed a system that worked for all of us. I didn't have to over-advocate. They asked how they could best help. I answered, and we were good. However, this location is only open Monday through Friday, so if we needed monitoring or procedures done on weekends, we had to go to an alternate clinic. I'm sad to say that the alternate clinic staff was consistently bad with every visit. From grabbing me without consent, to talking about me as if I wasn't in the room, to asking if my husband and I had recently gotten our eyes dilated, were the questions they asked in front of all of the other waiting patients. They added this layer of exclusion that complicated my experience unnecessarily. My efforts to speak up and prove that I'm capable of handling my own medical affairs did nothing to minimize their ableism. We were also approached a second time about editing our baby's genes. My husband and I decided early on that we would stop at IUI. We knew we didn't want to do IVF. We ended up going through three cycles which were unsuccessful. Part of my decision not to move on with more treatment is because I don't think I could handle being heartbroken by more failed results, coupled with the knowledge that I'd have to continue interacting with this clinic, whose staff I have to fight just to be treated like any other patient. It is ironic that the medical field is one of the hardest areas for self-advocacy. It's like, do no harm, unless the patient is disabled. Then all rules, courtesy, and etiquette go out the window. It has been hard reshaping my dream of becoming a parent. I spend lots of time grieving what could have been. I also wonder if I could have fought harder, spoken up louder, pushed back more forcefully, or made a difference in how these medical professionals treated me. I ask myself over and over again, did I fail my almost baby? I don't know how to end this article in a neat way. This journey has been messy. I know that I am not alone in this battle with the medical community about our rights and capacity. I know that it's not over. If we choose adoption, there will likely be more confrontations about our abilities as blind parents, and as our child grows, we will confront similar situations. This is where I feel inclined to end on a positive note. I should say that I'm hopeful and looking forward to the next chapter. Honestly, I don't know if I'm ready to be optimistic yet. This is the end to a painful chapter, and I'm allowing myself to sit with that. If anyone in the medical profession is reading this, know that your interactions matter. The Clay Vessel by Caroline Benavides. A photo appears on the page, the caption, Caroline Benavides. From the editor, Caroline is the second vice president of the National Federation of the Blind of New Mexico and has been a federationist for more than 3 decades. This presentation was one she gave to keynote the convention of our New Mexico affiliate. First, a little about me. I'm over 65 and have been blind since birth. I've been a member of NFB since 1989. As a member, I've benefited from the experience and knowledge of the NFB family, and I've had the honor of passing on some as well. I've shared drinks and tears and insights. I've pounded gavels, written policy, and joined forces in changing what it means to be blind. In my personal life, I've been a classroom teacher of sighted children and blind children. I've been a wife in 2 lovely marriages and raised 2 kind and caring adults. I bake sourdough, crochet things to wear, garden things to eat, and participate actively in my family and community. I'm holding in my hands a piece of pottery. It is a wide vase that I purchased when I first moved to New Mexico. I found it in a shop on the Jemez Pueblo. In order to bring this vase with me, I had to climb up to a high shelf in my kitchen, where it is displayed with other pieces in my collection. A layer of dust had to be removed before I could pack it. While thinking about my many years, 2 parts of me surfaced and emerged to result in what I'm going to share today. They are a pursuit and a belief. As a Christ follower, I've read in the Bible that God has frequently been called the potter, and we humans are referred to as clay vessels. During my college years, I took pottery for several semesters, and what I learned about the process, as I practiced at being a potter, made this reference come alive. When one creates a clay vessel, the potter starts with an intended vessel shape in mind. Will I make a vase or a jar or a pot? Of course, there are many other types of vessels. The desired shape determines how the vessel is made. First, an amount of wet, cold, gritty clay is placed on the wheel. With both hands, as the wheel is turning, the clay is worked to compress, smooth, and center it. With experience, one learns when the shaping can begin. Next, the basic shape is created. A taller cylinder for a vase, broader for a jar or pot. Slowly and carefully, while the wheel is still turning, the cylinder is opened up with the fingers. Water is periodically applied with a sponge to keep the clay pliable so that it doesn't crack. The fingers go in deeper and pull outward until the desired shape is reached. Care is taken to pull evenly and to stop in time to allow for a thick enough bottom. Then, with great care, the piece is finished with special tools and techniques and removed from the wheel. If this stage has been successful, the piece is ready for the kiln. Some vessels are fired over 2,000 degrees twice, first to harden it and then to glaze or finish it. As you can imagine, so many things can happen throughout the process to flaw the vessel, making it imperfect. Sometimes it is so flawed or too broken to be of any use, and it's thrown away. Most vessels are still usable, imperfections and all. A dent on the side, an uneven spout, a bubble in the glaze. None of these imperfections make the vessel unfunctional. In fact, they add uniqueness to the creation. All the details in the making of a clay vessel lend themselves to spiritual application as Christ followers. The ones I want to bring into my thoughts for you today are that the Master Potter intentionally creates his clay vessels with a purpose and for a function. The imperfections become part of the artwork, not devaluing it. In our 1-minute message, we say, blindness is not the characteristic that defines you or your future. But blindness is definitely a characteristic, one that all of us here share. It needs to be reckoned with in our daily encounters with people. Probably, even today, someone commented, either in fear or amazement, as you performed a simple task. What I hope to challenge you with today is this. Can blindness be the characteristic that refines you? Some synonyms for refine are elevate, focus, hone, improve, perfect, polish, sharpen. Can our blindness hone and perfect us? Could it refine and sharpen us? The answer depends on how we allow our blindness to affect our outcome. I recently learned of a young lady who had been blind since birth. She had graduated from high school with a deep-seated belief that no one would hire her when they had the choice to hire qualified sighted people. She was willing to live at home and live her life dependent on others. She had an additional disadvantage of kidney disease that required dialysis. Many would have agreed that she was justified in her belief. A persistent blind friend encouraged, pleaded, insisted that she pursue a stint at an NFB training center. She finally gave it a try. We all know that took a bit of courage on her part. At first, she was resistant to the firm insistence that she was capable. She now has the possibility of a future transplant and a customer service job. A man I know became blind as an adult. He had to give up his career. His wife left him, and he found himself helpless, dependent, and depressed. He could have understandably stayed there. However, he ended up, with the influence of other blind people, entering a new career. He became a teacher at one of the NFB centers, pouring out encouragement and practical techniques to his students. He has also been seen in the halls of our state and national government advocating for the rights of blind people. I'm sure this young lady I mentioned a moment ago will benefit from techniques others use and will probably have the opportunity to share ones that she has discovered. Both of these people became refined by their struggles and setbacks. However, they chose to be refined, not confined, by their blindness. After preparing for many years to be a classroom teacher, I interviewed at the school where I had done my student teaching. I fully expected to get hired because they had seen my capabilities firsthand. I was not hired and, in fact, learned that the potential grade team had gone to the district and argued that I would require too much of their assistance. I was devastated and questioned my sanity for even thinking I could win. However, I had already interacted with several blind teachers who encouraged me and restored my confidence. I lost a discrimination suit, but after writing an editorial explaining the misconceptions and alternative techniques, I was hired by a principal who read my piece and interviewed me. I could have avoided all the anger and tears, but I had qualified blind people pouring and sharing and standing with me. Years later, I could use my personal experience to pour and share and stand with others. Most of us here can look back on our own experience with blindness and isolate times when we would have found it easier to be the vessel who tucked ourselves in a storage box or pushed ourselves back on a dark shelf. Maybe you're there now. I'd like to ask you, were you designed to be a pot to pour out encouragement? Maybe you are a covered jar storing practical advice and techniques, or a slender and graceful vase standing ready to advocate. Perhaps you are still receiving from others who are further along in the refining process. Yes, blindness may be like that bubble in the polished glaze, or that dent in the smooth shape, or that nick in the spout. But your blindness does not affect your usefulness or change your purpose. It can be the characteristic that has made you stronger, kinder, empathetic, and inspirational. No, blindness is certainly not the characteristic that defines you or your future. It can be the characteristic that refines your own low expectations as you face its challenges, allow it to sharpen and improve you, and then pour out, sharing with and standing with others. Benetech recognized with a grant to continue its ongoing work on behalf of the blind. From the editor, many of us remember the emptiness we felt when hearing about a new book and knowing it would be many months or even years before we got a chance to read it. We remember all too well that books not enjoying popular appeal would likely never appear in a form we could easily read unless we worked hard to make it so. Then came along a non-profit service called Bookshare, one made possible by the 1996 amendments to the Copyright Act that we refer to as the Chafee Amendments and supported vigorously. All of a sudden, a book that you scanned could be made available to me, and the book I scanned could be made available to you and hundreds of others. At last, my public library actually belongs to me, and it offered more than the pleasant smell of books. The cohort of volunteers who signed up to scan for Bookshare were a part of something wonderful and transformative. For this reason and many others, the National Federation of the Blind has always been a part of celebrating the good work of Bookshare and helping in its funding when we can. In recognition of this support, the corporation that Bookshare now falls under wrote to thank us. Here is the correspondence. Dear Anil, Benetech is thrilled to announce that the Department of Education, Office of Special Education Programs, has awarded Benetech's Bookshare platform another 5 years of funding to support the literacy and education needs of students with disabilities in the U.S. We could not have achieved this award without your enthusiastic support. Your letter helped us demonstrate the impact that having access to accessible educational materials has on students with learning differences and visual and physical impairments that create barriers to reading. The entire Benetech staff wanted to personally thank you for your continued support of our program and provide you with a link to the announcement so you can learn more about the work we are doing to make education equitable. Feel free to share this news that you helped make possible with your network. As we prepare to execute against our plan for this critical work, we look forward to collaborating with you and appreciate your ongoing support to make inclusive, equitable education a priority in all learning environments. Kind regards, Lisa Waters Vern, VP Programs. Here is the letter we wrote to help Benetech acquire the grant. Benetech's proposal in response to CFDA 84.327D. Dear Dr. Waters Vern, on behalf of the National Federation of the Blind, NFB, I am pleased to provide this letter in support of Benetech's grant application to the U.S. Department of Education to ensure that accessible instructional materials are available to children with disabilities in a timely manner and that the use of these materials is supported across various age groups, formats, and learning environments. The National Federation of the Blind is the most transformative membership and advocacy organization of blind people in the United States, and as such, represents the end beneficiaries of any work with non-visual access technology. In 1990, the NFB opened the International Braille and Technology Center for the Blind, IBTC, the leading evaluation and training center on technology for the blind in the world, housing a comprehensive collection of speech and braille technology worth over $2.5 million. In January 2004, the organization opened the National Federation of the Blind Jernigan Institute, the first and only research and training facility developed and directed by the blind for the blind. The institute leads the quest to understand the real problems of blindness and to develop innovative education, technologies, products, and services that help the world's blind to achieve independence. The Jernigan Institute has expanded the expertise and educational outreach of the IBTC, including assisting with the development and improvement of new technological innovations. We have been supporters of Benetech's education work through Bookshare and Diagram, and we share their commitment to creating and supporting accessible content for individuals with disabilities. Bookshare has been and remains an essential tool for many blind students and professionals to access a diverse array of information vital to their education and careers. Benetech's leadership is evident not only in leveraging technology for services and communication, but also in building a broad community of technologists, educators, researchers, policymakers, parents, publishers, and other stakeholders. Benetech has proven itself to be an innovator in the field of accessible educational materials through your work in the successful build, Benetech Unlocks Individualized Learning Delivery Center, which has served over 800,000 students and includes over 1 million accessible e-books. We are confident in your ability to scale up large national projects and to deliver upon them in a far-reaching, long-lasting manner. We are excited about Benetech's plan to address the challenges inherent in ensuring the accessibility of educational materials while continuing to develop innovations to meet the needs of students with disabilities over the next 5 years. Through your proposal, you will further advance Bookshare, the industry-leading technology used to produce and distribute accessible books, expand your work with the publishing ecosystem by adding new partners, helping many to update their workflows to become globally certified accessible, and increase the awareness of accessible materials through training and outreach with a focus on diverse and underserved communities, particularly as they recover from the missed learning caused by the pandemic. We strongly support Benetech's proposal and look forward to working with you to make this program a success. A report from the Advocacy and Policy Team by John Perret, Jeff Kalock, and Justin Young. A photo appears on the page, the caption, John Perret. From the editor, one of the highlights of our national convention has always been the report of our legislative efforts, our progress, and the work we have left to do. This report was first given by Mr. Gashel and, agendas being what they often are, he got a little less time than he anticipated, but always managed to pull it off well. Now the work of the advocacy and policy team is a bit more diverse, but it still offers the same excitement to me. Here is what John Perret, Jeff Kalock, and Justin Young said to our 2022 National Convention. John Perret. F. Scott Fitzgerald once said, "Never confuse a single defeat with a final defeat." Mr. Fitzgerald's first book, This Side of Paradise, was rejected by publishers 122 times before Charles Scribner's Sons Media recognized its potential. Fitzgerald then went on to write a few more books, including The Great Gatsby, considered by many to be one of the greatest novels ever written. While Fitzgerald initially faced rejection after rejection, he did not let these initial setbacks deter him from pursuing his goal. Political advocacy, much like publishing, requires that we have the patience, clarity of mind, and determination to recognize that a single defeat or setback does not mean we are finished. There have been many times in the past where the outlook for our legislative priorities has been grim. There have been difficult and tense negotiations, flat-out refusals, and much lively discussion. Things have not always gone our way, but we have kept fighting because perseverance, determination, and tenacity are three characteristics that encapsulate the National Federation of the Blind. Times are tough, but we are far from finished. Because of that persistence, our legislation now has more momentum than ever before. On January 3, 2021, the first day of the 117th Congress, we had no sponsored legislation. On January 21, 2021, Representatives Thompson and Kelly introduced the Access Technology Affordability Act in the House. We now have 158 co-sponsors. On February 3, 2021, Senators Cardin and Boozman introduced the Access Technology Affordability Act in the Senate. We now have 37 co-sponsors. On April 5, 2021, Representatives Scott and McMorris Rogers introduced the Transformation to Competitive Integrated Employment Act in the House. We now have 54 co-sponsors. On November 18, 2021, Senators Casey and Daines introduced the Transformation to Competitive Integrated Employment Act in the Senate. Given that it has been 5 years since we have had a companion bill in the Senate, this is an important accomplishment. On July 29, 2021, Representative Schakowsky introduced the Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act in the House. We now have 58 co-sponsors. We have been working on the Website and Application Accessibility Act, and we expect it to be introduced in both the House and the Senate soon. Along with the National Federation of the Blind, 19 other disability groups support this legislation. In addition, our affiliates continue to rack up successes at the state level. Regarding voting, 28 states allow electronic ballot delivery for blind voters, and 8 states allow electronic ballot delivery and return. In the spring of 2020, the NFB of Illinois began working on this issue. They attempted to contact the governor and the state legislature because a bill designed to provide absentee voting for the 2020 election only provided the ballot in Braille or large print for blind and low vision voters. Missing was the right to cast a ballot privately and independently using access technology. Initial efforts to work with the governor and the legislature were unsuccessful, but the NFB of Illinois would not give up and built a coalition of interested organizations, including Equip for Equality, the state's protection and advocacy agency, and the Illinois Council of the Blind. Their efforts resulted in electronic ballot delivery, but only for the 2020 general election. The coalition then began working on a permanent solution. In 2021, bills were introduced in both chambers of the Illinois General Assembly, but did not pass. The legislature referred the matter back to the State Board of Election for further study and hearings. So, the coalition redoubled their efforts by continuing to work through the summer and fall of 2021 to urge the Board of Elections to conduct the hearings mandated by the legislature. In early 2022, bills were once again introduced in both chambers of the Illinois General Assembly. When the passage of these bills seemed to be in doubt, the NFB of Illinois took assertive action. On March 9, the affiliate led an information protest in front of the State of Illinois building in Chicago. The story was picked up by the local CBS radio affiliate WBBM News Radio. I am happy to report that on May 13, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed SB 829 into law. 16 states have phased out or limited the payment of subminimum wages for people with disabilities. 15 states have passed legislation protecting the rights of blind parents. All of this success would not be possible without the perseverance, determination, and tenacity of the members of the National Federation of the Blind. Whether at the federal level, the state level, or the local level, NFB members make it happen. 20 years ago this month, I registered for NFB Newsline. Since then, I have used NFB Newsline almost every day, initially over the telephone and more frequently via the iOS app. I listen to national news, local news, magazines, and the weather. NFB Newsline is what first alerted me to the National Federation of the Blind. I would have never attended my first chapter meeting, Tampa, my first affiliate convention, Florida, and my first national convention, Georgia, if I had not learned about the National Federation of the Blind by using NFB Newsline. It was created 27 years ago and has provided essential news to tens of thousands of blind Americans. It is available via the telephone, the web, the Victor Reader Stream, the NLS Digital Talking Book Player, the Amazon Echo, and the iOS app. There are 542 publications, and some portion of NFB Newsline is accessed every 1.86 seconds on average. Recent editions include J14, Forbes, the Tuscaloosa News, the Illinois Pentagraph, the New Mexico Deming Headlight, and the Nepal Kathmandu Post. There are also TV listings for every cable and satellite provider, 7-day weather forecasts, emergency alerts, and job listings. If you do not already use NFB Newsline, I urge you to sign up. Sean Seward is our new manager of the Independence Market. He was once a Randolph Shepherd vendor, so he brings an exciting entrepreneurial spirit to the market. You can browse our catalog on our website and order items by calling our main number. We have over 400 items in our catalog, including white canes, braille and audio watches, kitchen aids, measuring tools, and games. The Independence Market also helps with our free white cane and slate and stylus programs. Over the past year, the National Federation of the Blind has distributed 5,763 white canes and 705 slate and styluses. We also have NFB-logoed shirts and jackets. I regularly wear our logoed attire because I am proud to demonstrate my commitment to the NFB, and I am proud to think about the successes of the many Federationists who came before us, demonstrating their commitment by relentlessly advocating for the rights of the blind. Those Federation members understood that no matter the circumstances, they had to press on. They demonstrated the perseverance, determination, and tenacity that describes Federationists then the same way it does now. To paraphrase a line from Fitzgerald's seminal work, "So we labored on, boats against the current, because we understand the difference between a single defeat and a final defeat." There have been times when societal inertia, industry opposition, and political forces seemed too powerful for us to overcome. There have been times when we have been told to accept inadequate braille instruction, lack of employment opportunities, and accessibility barriers as a fact of life. But we, the organized blind, have labored on. Sometimes our proposals, our ideas, and our plans have been rejected, but we are not deterred. We will work together to improve educational opportunities, to expand employment opportunities, and to protect the civil rights of blind Americans. We have had many successes in the past, both at the state and federal level, and we will have even more in the future. We will build upon the foundation constructed by the Federationists who came before us. We will work to get our Voting Rights Bill passed in every state. We will work to get our 14C Bill passed in every state. We will work to get our Parental Rights Bill passed in every state. We will work to get the Access Technology Affordability Act, the Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act, the Website and Application Accessibility Act, and the Transformation to Competitive Integrated Employment Act to the President's desk. This will not be easy, but we are up to the task. We will work together with love, hope, and determination. We will transform our dreams into reality, and we will live the lives we want. A photo appears on the page, the caption, "Jeff Kalock." Jeff Kalock. As we gather at this year's convention, we focus on our objectives and prioritize our goals for the coming year. While preparing for the future is important, it is also important to reflect on the past and to take into account the accomplishments over the years and review our current standing. The foothold we have built did not come easily or quickly. It required time and patience, hard work, and sacrifice. We stood on the shoulders of giants as these leaders guided us to greater heights and helped us pursue a path towards a better tomorrow. During the Federation's last convention in New Orleans in 1997, Dr. Jernigan, in his banquet speech, said, "Equal responsibility as well as equal rights is the very essence of the NFB's philosophy. It is what we set out to get in 1940. It is what we have fought for every step of the way. It is what we are now close to achieving, and it is what we are absolutely determined to have. Equal responsibility, equal rights. Dr. Jernigan's words from the 1997 convention were as true then as they are now. It is the very reason we are advocating for our legislative agenda. All of the bills we advocate for promote independence and accessibility. But by asking for those concepts, there is an understanding that responsibility is part of the agreement, an agreement that solidifies an investment that we at the National Federation of the Blind know will benefit all parties involved. The Access Technology Affordability Act will put more access technology in the hands of blind people. The bill does this by providing a $2,000 refundable tax credit over the course of 3 years for qualified access technology, such as Braille note takers, screen reading software, or Braille embossers. It provides the freedom and flexibility for individuals to choose which accessible technologies fit their own needs. Some may need a refreshable Braille display, while others need an embosser. This legislation equips blind Americans with the tools needed to independently seek employment and excel at their job. Additionally, we expect this legislation to increase the federal government's revenue in the form of taxes and reduce dependence on Social Security disability insurance, supplemental security income, Medicare, and Medicaid programs. Federal, state, and payroll taxes will grow as more blind Americans enter the workforce. Social Security disability insurance, supplemental security income, and other programs will be better funded as the use of these programs decreases. For all these reasons, this legislation has gained bipartisan support in both chambers of Congress. It presents itself as a win-win in many respects, and we must continue to push for its passage. Advocating for legislation cannot and will not be possible without expressing our voices and casting our ballots. Again, it is the responsibility of the individual to exercise their civic duty to vote. Therefore, we must seize every opportunity and focus our efforts to ensure that every ballot is non-visually accessible and provides the blind voter the same privacy, independence, and ease of use as other voters. It is imperative that we engage with all of our elected officials on this important matter if we seek the changes necessary to overcome discrimination. That is why when we engage with our policymakers, we must express to them the significance behind casting a ballot both privately and independently. Mind you, this isn't an unattainable notion that we cannot achieve. Various states, as a result of our advocacy efforts, have enacted into law legislation ensuring these concepts are put into place. Because of these efforts, several states have accessible remote voting that allows voters privacy and independence, everything from registering to vote, requesting a ballot, casting a ballot, and verifying your ballots. We cannot and will not stand silent while we know this opportunity awaits. This is why we must take action to mobilize and educate our lawmakers so that accessible voting isn't only available in a handful of states, but every state. Now, 25 years after Dr. Jernigan's speech, we reflect on the words that he spoke. If equal rights are to be given, then we must accept the responsibility. Well, we do accept that responsibility and continue to do so each moment we educate lawmakers, grow our membership, and come together as an organization, because when we mobilize and flex our strength, there is nothing we cannot accomplish together. A photo appears on the page, the caption, Justin Young. Justin Young. In his 1967 banquet address, Dr. Jacobus Tenbrook said, "The blind have a right to live in the world. That right is as deep as human nature, as pervasive as the need for social existence, as ubiquitous as the human race, as invincible as the human spirit." To live in the world independently, we must have the right to access medical devices and be given the opportunity to earn a fair wage for the work we perform. At last year's convention, we passed Resolution 2021-01, which urged the United States Congress swiftly to consider and pass the Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act, thereby ensuring and protecting the independence, safety, and health of blind Americans. On July 29, 2021, Representative Jan Schakowsky from Illinois introduced H.R. 4853, the Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act. This bill would amend the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act related to Class 2 and 3 medical devices with a digital display, Some medical devices that apply to these categories would include continuous glucose monitor, blood pressure devices, chemotherapy, in-home dialysis machines, and many more. After amending the Food and Drug Cosmetic Act, it would require the Food and Drug Administration to begin a 3-year rulemaking process. After this rulemaking process, the manufacturers must make these devices accessible. Without accessibility, we will not be able to independently and safely use these critical health maintenance and monitoring products. It's time we be allowed to use the medical device we want, not the only one that might be somewhat accessible. We have made great efforts on our legislation to end the payment of subminimum wages. There has been a two-pronged approach on this initiative over the past several years. We have worked on both federal legislation like the Transformation to Competitive Integrated Employment Act, and there has also been a push at the state level. In total, 16 states have begun the elimination or have limited the use of Section 14C certificates. 3 of them happened this year. On April 14, the governor of Tennessee signed a law that would make it illegal after July 1 for businesses to pay subminimum wages. On May 23, South Carolina's governor signed a joint resolution phasing out subminimum wages by August 1, 2024. On June 15, the governor of Rhode Island signed a law immediately repealing sections of the state's labor law related to authorizing the payment of subminimum wages. The 13 other states are Alaska, California, Colorado, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Maine, Maryland, New Hampshire, Oregon, Texas, Vermont, and Washington. We have made great progress, but the fight is not over until Section 14C is once and for all gone. To echo Dr. Tenbrook all those years ago, we will continue to advocate for our rights to live in the world, and we will not stop until our work is done. Time to Start Planning for the 2023 Washington Seminar by Kyle Walls. A photo appears on the page, the caption, Kyle Walls. From the editor. Kyle Walls works on the advocacy and policy team and is often not recognized as much as he might be given what he does to craft announcements, work on resolutions, and proof the work of others. Here is what he has to say about our upcoming Washington seminar. The days are getting shorter, there's a chill in the air, and the leaves have just begun to fall from the trees. That means our annual Washington seminar is just around the corner. For 2023, the Washington Seminar will be back at the Holiday Inn Washington Capitol, located at 550 C Street, Southwest, Washington, D.C. To book a room, please use the booking link located at nfb.org/washington-seminar or call 877-834-3613 and use group code NB8. January will mark the start of the 118th Congress, and we wanted to make sure we were one of the first groups new members met with. That's why we scheduled next year's seminar from Monday, January 30 through Thursday, February 2, 2023. In a return to tradition, we will have the Great Gathering Inn on Monday, January 30, 2023, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. in the Capitol Ballroom. The next 3 days, Tuesday, January 31 through Thursday, February 2, 2023, will be devoted entirely to the members of the Federation meeting and connecting with your members of Congress. More information about the 2023 Washington Seminar, including our legislative priorities and a full schedule, will be released soon. Creating content with accessibility as the default, celebrating Drupal's Olivero theme and calling for more blind contributors by Mike Gifford. A photo appears on the page, the caption, Mike Gifford. From the editor. Mike Gifford is a developer with Drupal who came to tackle the challenge of accessibility in 2009, believing that it was an 18-month project. As you can see from the article that follows, he is still hard at work on the task, and the wonderful news is that many at Drupal are joining him. So too is the news that the National Federation of the Blind is being acknowledged, as is the work of one of our most proactive technology experts, Rachel Olivero, now deceased. Here is the presentation that Mike Gifford gave on July 10 at the 2022 National Convention in New Orleans. Thank you for inviting me here today. I arrived yesterday and really enjoyed all the great presentations. I've learned a lot more about the work that your community does. Very impressive. Speaking of impressive work, let's hear it again for Global Accessibility Awareness Day. How many people have participated in GAD events in the past? Please make some noise. My name is Mike Gifford, and I am one of 4 accessibility maintainers who are part of Drupal Core. If you're not familiar with Drupal, it's software that manages content on websites across the internet. It's used by many websites that you visit on a daily basis. There are more than 1 million sites running Drupal around the world, representing about 2% of the web, including the NFB's website and that of several chapter sites. More than software, Drupal is a community. Drupal is also a community that is participating in the GAAD pledge. Drupal is just the 3rd open source tool to commit to a higher level of accessibility compliance. Drupal is just one of millions of open source projects. The open source movement is founded on the idea of standing on the shoulders of giants. That idea has been echoed several times already at this convention. I work for Civil Actions, but for 21 years prior to this, I had my own web development business in Canada. While running Open Concept, we implemented sites for the Alliance for Equality of Blind Canadians, Broadcasting Accessibility Fund, Canadian National Institute for Blind, CNIB, and the Government of Canada's Accessible Standards Canada. How many people here know what Drupal is? Please make some noise. I've been spearheading Drupal's accessibility since 2009, and I am regularly reminded of how much more I need to learn. Back when I started, I had expected that we could get it fixed up in 1 or 2 tops. Drupal's themes. What brings me here today is Drupal's new default theme. The default theme defines Drupal's look and feel. I was asked to introduce this new theme to the NFB. I am here to represent all those who worked hard to build this new, very accessible default theme. Names are important. The old default theme, Bartik, was named after Jean Bartik, who was a pioneer in computer science. We often forget that women have always been a critical part of the computer science sector. The Drupal community wants to help improve the proportion of women involved in the open source movement. The name Bartik is a reminder of this. It is unusual for a name of a theme to generate much attention, but in this case, it is more than just a name. The people behind this theme wanted to honor someone who inspired them, someone who might help remind us all of the constant need to build a more inclusive world. A small group of front-end developers began meeting to discuss how to best modernize Drupal's default look/feel. They needed a name for the project, Olivero. These front-end Drupal developers wanted it to be beautiful, dynamic, modern, and to do so without compromising accessibility. It was critical that it have excellent support for both mobile and desktop views. It was also important that this theme would work fine with or without JavaScript. When they heard of Rachel Olivero's untimely death, they felt inspired by her contributions to the Drupal community. They chose Olivero as the name for their new theme. After settling on this name, it became especially important that we lived up to Rachel's example and ensure it be as inclusive as possible. The name Olivero is a reminder of this. How many people here knew Rachel? Please make some noise. Rachel was well known to the NFB as both a leader and a staff member at the main NFB office. Many here knew her, perhaps before she even started working at the NFB. I believe that her partner Karen is here as well. Rachel likely had an impact on many of us here today. In her career, we know that one of the last things she did was launch the new NFB site built with Drupal 8. This new theme was largely led by the Lullabot Digital Agency and especially Mike Herschel. This wouldn't be possible without contributions from Matthew Tift, Kat Shaw, James Sansbury, Jen Witalski, Jared Poncho, Pooja Bonacorsi, and many others. The themes for Drupal Core have been pretty accessible since Drupal 7. That just wasn't good enough for Olivero. This ultimately meant committing to doing considerably more testing and evaluation for accessibility. Hundreds, if not thousands, of hours went into making this theme as accessible as we could. Accessible by default. The Drupal community believes in addressing accessibility early in the project management lifecycle. The Olivero team brought in the expertise of Drupal's accessibility maintainers. We pushed to test with a wide range of devices and settings so that we could support as many users as possible. We know that the best way to build the best design for everyone is to ensure it supports the fringe. I want to highlight the contributions of 2 of Drupal's accessibility maintainers. Andrew McPherson provided very careful consideration improving this theme's accessibility. Rain Bruall-Michaels also provided support for both cognitive disabilities and for users who use switch devices. In most sites, the menu structure is critical for navigation, but also often a source of accessibility errors. The Olivero menu system has undergone extensive work on its accessibility. IRA control attributes have been added. Screen reader-only text was built in for better submenu support. Overflow support was added for longer menus. Logical focus orders were reviewed in both mobile and desktop. Testing was done for Windows high contrast mode, including custom style sheets. Interactions were carefully considered to see that a wide range of scenarios with assistive technology were evaluated. The Olivero team engaged with the NFB to help with this. We wanted to make sure that people with lived experience of disability were involved in testing it early in the development process. Carl Belanger did much of the testing for the NFB. We were happy that the NFB was able to review the draft theme and help us improve its accessibility. Drupal's accessibility issue queue is always open, and we welcome feedback when new items arise. Just last month, Drupal 9.2.0 was released and Olivero officially became the default theme. There are now at least a dozen public presentations on this theme available for free on YouTube. Our community is excited about our work and eager to share it with the world. Accessibility journey. But this isn't the end of the story. How many people here have contributed a bug report to a piece of software? Please raise your hand, and I will try to roughly capture this. How many people have reported an error on a website? Please make some noise. Web developers need to hear from you. People are way more compelling than guidelines. We need your involvement, not just with the Olivero theme, but with all of Drupal. It probably won't surprise people here, but Drupal's accessibility has already benefited from input from the blind community. Everett Zufelt was our first Drupal core accessibility maintainer. Everett pushed us to consider the authoring environment along with front-facing pages in Drupal 7. I hired Everett in 2009, fresh out of university. He worked exclusively on Drupal core in that time and played a critical role in helping our community understand accessibility. He is now the Vice President of Product and Partnerships of a large digital design agency in Toronto. Vincenzo Rubano was finishing high school in Italy when he started contributing to Drupal 8. Vincenzo found places in which accessibility had been broken when refactoring parts of Drupal 7. He contributed to a number of issues and caught several barriers we had missed. I helped fundraise to bring Vinciano to DrupalCon Portland in 2017. At the time, he mentioned to me that he had multiple job offers from people at the conference. He declined all of them to go to university. He is now finishing his PhD in computer science. Get involved. The earlier accessibility is addressed, the more robust it is. It also often costs less to develop. If we can improve the accessibility of the framework used by a million sites, then it is fair to assume that the Drupal platform will benefit many of the billion people who have disabilities. These changes often take years to actually get implemented by the sites that you and I use regularly. However, getting involved can really pay off over time. Olivero is the new Drupal default theme. This is what people will see out of the box for years to come. In Drupal 10, we will see the introduction of the new Starter Kit theme. This theme will likely be the basis of many, if not most, new Drupal sites. The Starter Kit theme is a basic, unstyled theme that is set up to allow front-end developers to quickly make a site look and function the way the client wants it to. It contains all the structured HTML, but with minimal CSS styling. Unlike Olivero, it isn't designed to look good. Getting involved in the Starter Kit theme is a great way to help influence new sites to not only meet WCAG requirements, but also provide a good oral experience. Part of this is simply documenting best practices so that developers and designers don't need to hunt for them. The other part is finding new ways for best practices to be incorporated. We need your help. The web keeps changing and assistive technology is struggling to keep up. Our use of technology changes. We need people with disabilities engaged in ensuring that open source tools meet all of our needs. There will always be accessibility barriers identified in any tool. The earlier we catch these, the better it will be for everyone. We want your help to make the Starter Kit theme more accessible. How many people are more interested in contributing to an open source project like Drupal? Again, please make some noise. Nothing about us without us is a rallying cry for us all. There are lots of ways to become involved. Thank you for your time. If you like, I will be available at lunch for a session on contributing to Drupal. I will be at Salon B at lunch. Hope to see you at Salon B to talk about making Drupal better for everyone. You can also reach out to Civic Actions and connect with me there. Is It Respectable to Be Deafblind? By Rocky Hart. A photo appears on the page, the caption, Rocky Hart. From the editor. Rocky began writing for the Braille Monitor as a young high school student. He has talent, passion, and is a good communicator. In this article, he speaks both to his love for the Federation and two areas in which he believes we fall short. Just as fervently, he believes that we can and will make adjustments so that we are more inclusive. Here is what he says. We in the National Federation of the Blind have asserted for over 8 decades that blindness is not the characteristic that defines a person or their future, that we must raise the expectations of blind people and, as we often say, we can live the lives we want in spite of our blindness. This philosophy was what initially drew me to the NFB as a child, and the reason I joined the organization as an adolescent 4 years ago. Becoming a Federation member was a decision I do not regret and in fact has provided me with a great deal of opportunity as a high school and college student. I have advocated with the Federation at both the state and federal levels on issues affecting blind people, have served in positions of recruitment in both my state student division and state affiliate, and have served as secretary of the at-large chapter of the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota since July 2018. I have also participated in activities with Blind Inc., our NFB-affiliated training center in Minneapolis. I have enthusiastically enjoyed my activities in the Federation, and it would not be hyperbolic to say that I would give my life for the movement and what we stand for, considering how much you have given to me. Through all of my support and passion for the NFB, however, I have consistently noticed a trend within the organization that concerns me deeply, one which is very near and dear to my heart. When I was 4 months old, I was diagnosed with Norrie's disease, the genetic condition which caused my congenital blindness. At age 10, I began to develop a hearing impairment directly linked to the same condition. It began with a mild hearing loss in my left ear, and I was fit with my first hearing aid in May of 2013. 3 years later, I had lost even more hearing in my left ear as well as in my right, and I was fit with a matching hearing aid. This condition is progressive, and my hearing has declined even further since then. At this point, hearing aids still work for me, and time will tell if I will ever be in need of further interventions, such as cochlear implants. Several people in my state affiliate are aware that I have a hearing loss because I have been very open about it. However, most do not know the extent of it. Having been a member of both the blind and deafblind communities for the better part of 7 years, I am well aware that I am not the only deafblind federationist. That being said, since I have joined the organization, I have noticed that there is, at the very least, a great hesitation to discuss deafblindness, as well as a lack of awareness of issues affecting people with a dual sensory loss. I have colleagues who are deafblind who have expressed that while they know the Federation knows how to handle issues affecting the blind, we are not as aware, and therefore not as well versed, in how to also address those issues affecting people with a hearing impairment. I also know an individual outside the Federation who was totally blind, and although he knew I had a hearing loss, he was reluctant to ask me about it because he believed I might feel as though he was judging me, that I might be upset that he knew about it. This occurred despite the fact that I initiated our first conversation on the matter. It is certainly true that the Federation has taken actions over the years on behalf of the deafblind community, such as making NFB Newsline accessible to those who use Braille displays, but this scratches the surface of the issues with which we must deal. It seems to me that there is a great deal of stigma in the blind community about losing one's hearing, and this bothers me. Perhaps it is because we who are blind use our hearing at length to gain vital information about our world that the sighted receive through their vision. However, the fact that some of us do not have this, or at least at a normal level, does not mean we cannot also use certain alternative techniques to perform certain tasks. In my view, a blind person with a hearing impairment is no different from a blind person with diabetes. In his 1963 banquet address entitled Blindness, Handicap or Characteristic, Dr. Kenneth Jernigan boldly declared, "No one is likely to disagree with me if I say that blindness, first of all, is a characteristic. But a great many people will disagree when I go on to say that blindness is only a characteristic. It is nothing more or less than that. Is this not also true of those who are deafblind? He also asserted in this speech, as he did in many of his others, that it is respectable to be blind. If this is true, as we in the Federation believe it to be, is it not also respectable to be deafblind? I have had a hearing impairment for the past 9 years, and I now self-identify as deafblind. This fact I am perfectly content with others knowing. I am confident that while there are those who prefer to be silent on the matter, most people who are deafblind would be comfortable being identified in this manner, and many do not mind discussing their dual sensory loss if approached in a respectful, courteous manner. In fact, it was just recently that the Helen Keller National Center officially replaced the term deaf/blind with one word, deafblind, after decades of requests from the deafblind community. We believe our combined vision and hearing loss, and the degree to which we possess it, are one and the same. It is not that one sensory loss is inferior or superior to the other. Rather, deafblindness is one characteristic upon which our identity is built. One of our goals in the Federation is to become more inclusive, and this effort must, as I see it, include those who are deafblind. At our conventions, we should continue to ensure that those who require interpreters receive them, and that those who need a front-row seat to accommodate their hearing loss can obtain it. What many do not know, as I did not until just recently, is that American Sign Language, ASL, interpreters can provide services to individuals who are hard of hearing. This includes repeating what a speaker is saying if the individual cannot hear it, voiceover, signing to them for the same purposes if they know ASL on any level, or, in the case of those who are blind, provide human guide where that is needed. One of the most common misconceptions about deafblindness is that those who are classified as such have no hearing and no vision. While there are those who fit this definition, many with a dual sensory loss have some residual hearing and/or vision. This must be taken into consideration whenever accommodating those with this dual sensory loss. Also, as loss of hearing is becoming more common in the blind community, we should equip our NFB-affiliated training centers to instruct those affected in ways that do not solely rely on their hearing. As an active member of the deafblind community, I have heard stories of individuals who have attended programs at one of our centers who were told they are not trying hard enough when performing tasks such as crossing an intersection. In many cases, they may be trying as hard as they can. Their hearing is simply unreliable, and they may require more assistance with this task than the ordinary blind person would. As a member of this organization, I am committed to making us as inclusive to those who are deafblind as possible. It is indeed respectable to be deafblind, and this dual sensory loss is just a characteristic like any other, just as blindness itself. I believe that as long as we recognize this, we will be in an even better position to grow our organization. She Fought on Behalf of Her Blind Son by Ali Markovich. From the editor. This article originally appeared in Berkeleyside, an online nonprofit news source, on July 21, 2022, and is reprinted with the kind permission of author Ali Markovich and Berkeleyside. BUSD is the Berkeley Unified School District. She fought on behalf of her blind son. Now, BUSD will make online learning tools more accessible. The National Federation of the Blind hopes a settlement the mother reached with BUSD will become a blueprint for other school districts. Kai Wang was in first grade when the pandemic moved his classroom at Cragmont Elementary behind the screen of his laptop. And for all the challenges of virtual learning, Kai, who was blind, faced even more of them. Virtual learning hastened the arrival of a new era in educational technology. The problem, though, was that many of these tools were not built with students with disabilities in mind. Math, for instance, was no longer a paper and a pencil affair. Instead, numbers flashed on the screen and students solved equations using educational technology software. But when Kai moved his cursor around the screen during his math class, the screen reader repeated the same word, unpronounceable. It said it over and over again, unpronounceable. The same situation repeated itself nearly every time Kai logged on for class, a situation that was documented in the San Francisco Chronicle. Once, a teacher told him he was excused for the rest of the hour because he wouldn't be able to see it. That was unbearable for us. He's a sponge, wanting to learn every single thing, and he was just simply excluded from learning, said Mina Sun, Kai's mom. As the pandemic wore on, Sun quit her job as a scientist at UC Berkeley to focus full-time on advocacy for her son and other blind students. After numerous attempts to work with Berkeley Unified, Sun said, she secured the help of the National Federation of the Blind and an attorney, Timothy Elder, who is blind himself. After she sent a demand letter on December 2, 2020, arguing that the district was not meeting its obligations under the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, the district agreed to a process called structured negotiations that serves a more collaborative alternative to a lawsuit. The result was a June 9 settlement, the first of its kind, according to Sun and the National Federation of the Blind, that establishes a process for reviewing the technology BUSD uses and creates a system for responding to accessibility complaints. Providing quality, engaging, and accessible learning and service to our students is a district priority. As a system, we will continue to reflect on our work and make continual improvements to make sure this remains true, a BUSD spokesperson wrote in an emailed statement, saying that the district could not comment further on the settlement due to student privacy requirements. Moving forward, any new tech purchases will have to go through staff at multiple departments with the hope of ensuring accessibility for students with disabilities. The structured negotiations didn't result in any damages. The district paid out just $50,000 in legal fees. Instead, Sun wanted systemic policy changes. Sun and her team hope that the settlement will be the sort of experiment that, if it's effective, could become a blueprint for other school districts. Removing logistical barriers to learning for students with disabilities. When Kai was in preschool, he was diagnosed with retinal degeneration. As he got older, his vision would deteriorate and he would become legally blind. Sun, who did not know anyone who was blind at the time, was terrified. It took years for her to develop the stance she now takes. Kai is brilliant. He can achieve anything he wants, and her job is to get rid of the logistical barriers that stand in his way. I have talked to lots of people who think, you're asking too much. You can't expect everything to be accessible, Sun said. But from her perspective, she is asking for the bare minimum. For Kai, now 9 years old, to simply have the same educational access that his younger brother, Skylar, who is not visually impaired, will get. One time, Kai asked his mom whether she could call just one of the 10 or so technology companies whose tools he was supposed to be using in class every day. Could they make their tool just a little bit accessible for him, he asked. It was heartbreaking for me to hear that, Sun said. It's just the casual message our society is sending. We're not supposed to ask for all. We can ask for less. While the technology schools are using may be new, the obligations they have to educate students with disabilities are not. The Individuals with Disabilities Education Act has existed in one form or another since 1975, said Chris Danielson, the public relations director at National Federation of the Blind, who worked with Sun. Yes, technology has changed, but if the school can adapt to the existence of new technology, then it should also be thinking about how that technology is potentially going to affect students with disabilities. Though IDEA has existed for decades, compliance can be spotty, and it's at least part of the explanation for why just 15% of blind people in the U.S. have a college degree. Classroom use of tech has increased over the last decade or so, dictating how students turn in homework and complete projects. But the problem just hit an exponential curve when distance learning happened, said Timothy Elder, founder of TRE Legal Practice, a law firm that focuses on students with disabilities. As a result, blind students like Kai, as well as students with disabilities like deafness, faced increasing accessibility challenges. Some of the same technology that the BUSD is using is being used elsewhere, which means that blind kids who encounter it are experiencing the same barriers, Danielson said. A cause to celebrate in working toward greater accessibility. The settlement, which lays out an instructional software review and approval process in Berkeley Unified, is intended to ensure that technology will be accessible for all students. It could apply to everything from students turning in assignments on Seesaw to playing study games like Kahoot. When BUSD wants to purchase a new technology, it will have to go through a review by staff in special education, technology services, and educational services. Only if the technology is accessible, aligns with the curriculum, and complies with student privacy rules will it be approved for purchase under the new process. Though it sounds bureaucratic, this could mean the difference between kids getting to participate in class and having to sit out altogether. And while Sun wishes it didn't have to come to a legal letter or fall on the shoulders of parents, her attorney praised BUSD for having the political will to be a leader in the field. Software should be accessible across the board, and we shouldn't be expecting the school districts to have to fight for it, district by district, Elder said. As Sun and others work toward a more accessible world, they have cause to celebrate, and they're hopeful that this means Kai's life will be just a little bit easier in the future. He's an exceptionally bright and talented individual, and I'm sure he's going to do amazing things in life, Elder said. I just want to make sure he gets every opportunity to do that. Correction. A previous version of this story, and its headline, mistakenly stated that Mina Sun sued BUSD on behalf of her son, Kai. Sun sent a letter arguing that the district was not meeting its obligations under the Americans with Disabilities Act. The letter led to structured negotiations, which eventually yielded a settlement. No lawsuit was filed. Ali Markovich reports on education and other topics for Berkeleyside. Email Ali at Berkeleyside, A-L-L-Y at B-E-R-K-E-L-E-Y-S-I-D-E dot org. Twitter, Ali Markovich, A-L-L-Y, M-A-R-K-O-V-I-C-H. Challenging Expectations, A Partnership with Vispero, School, Work, Home, by Patty Chang. A photo appears on the page, the caption, Patty Chang. From the editor, many of us know Patty Chang for the many roles she has played as a state treasurer, state president, and national board member. A role she has undertaken for some time now is as the director of development for the organization, and creating collaborative relationships with major players in the blindness field is just one of many areas in which she has excelled. Thanks to Vispero for again engaging in this collaborative relationship to help in raising the funds that are a vital part of the toolkit we will use in building a better future for blind people. Ever since I discovered JAWS in high school, I've used it for school, internships, and so many other things. As a communications student, I use JAWS for my writing, from news articles to stories. I am so grateful for a program that allows me to use my laptop to interact with Word, websites, emails, and so much more of the world. Having choices for accessing content empowers blind students and future professionals. Access technology allows us to uncover our potential. The National Federation of the Blind and our members benefit from a number of key collaborations to achieve equality, security, and opportunity for all blind people. One of the most important is with Vispero, the world's largest assistive technology provider for blind people and the maker of JAWS. We are pleased to announce that Vispero has generously offered a challenge grant to the Federation. Vispero will match up to $50,000 in contributions to help with our end-of-year annual appeal. So, if you give any time between October 15 and December 31 this year, your support is doubled. Please help us challenge expectations at work, school, and home by giving. If you are not in a position to give now, please share our campaign and ask others to help us to challenge expectations and achieve independence. If you are in a position to participate in the challenge grant, there are several ways to give. You can visit https://nfb.org/donate to give online. You can call 410-659-9314, extension 2430, to give by phone. You can mail a check to National Federation of the Blind, 200 East Wells Street, Baltimore, Maryland, 21230. Or you can assist by asking your friends and family to support the National Federation of the Blind. Together, we can turn dreams into reality, and end-of-year giving is a great time to help. Thank you for your support and active participation in the organized blind movement. Owning Your Creative Content, Cryptocurrency, Accessibility, and the Organized Blind Movement by Suman Kanuganti. A photo appears on the page, the caption, Suman Kanuganti. From the editor, Suman has attended many of our conventions and his message is always on the cutting edge. This year he comes to us in his capacity as CEO of the company Personal AI, based in San Diego, California. Here is a presentation he made at our 2022 National Convention on Saturday, July 9.
Good morning, National Federation of the Blind. My name is Suman Kanuganti. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Personal.ai. Previously, for many years, spoke to you as the founder of Aira. I cannot begin. Good morning, National Federation of the Blind. I cannot begin to speak without asking you all, if you are an Aira explorer, please make some noise. I feel welcome back. Thank you. I want to thank President Mark Riccobono for having me today to discuss the trends in technology that are critical for the blind community. After arriving at the convention yesterday morning, I ran into a good friend of mine, Paul Schrader. In our conversation, he said, "Suman, you are here for life now." I smiled and I said, "Of course I am. Why shouldn't I? This is my 8th consecutive year at the convention. I started my journey with NFB in 2015. You, this community, have shown me a path when I most needed it, have embraced me when I was most vulnerable, and guided me through building and developing experiences that were most novel, unique, and with a sense of connection. So, of course, I'm committed for life." Today, I want to talk to you about you, each of you, and each of your roles in the next generation of internet evolution. If you use the internet on a day-to-day basis, say I. If you want the entire internet to be accessible, say I. Okay, is the internet entirely accessible? Well, internet is about to celebrate its 40th birthday on January 1st, 2023. And just like humans, it continues to evolve its phases. Now, the first era of the internet was possible on huge mainframes, mostly available to government and institutions. There were just a few who put content and information on the websites. For the rest of humanity, this version of the internet, often referred to as Web 1, is simply read-only. So Web 1 is about accessibility. Although the Web 1 era started in 1993, the Section 508 amendment for digital content accessibility didn't happen until 1998. And the WCAG 2.0 standards did not start until 2008. Friends, that's 15 years later, Web 1 was supposed to be accessible to everyone. And it's still a work in progress after 30 years. Okay, so if Web 1 was mostly read-only by most, Web 2 is for consumers, was not just readable, but it's also about writable. This was the dot-com era in the early 21st century. Over time, many of us started writing and uploading to the internet in the form of applications and social media, or even podcasts. I remember the days when I sit with friends at the dining table and said, "I think it'll be cool to have someone read aloud my book anytime." And one of my other friends says, "Oh, there is an app for that." These apps increased the usability of the internet and created tons of utility for the consumers. But yesterday, John Perry, our John, said, "Application Accessibility Act and usability is happening this year. It's fantastic." But that's almost 15 years later of the beginnings of the Web 2 era. There's another example, which is accessibility team at Facebook and Meta started in 2012. That's 8 years after its inception. So during this time, almost everyone who has access to the internet and used it has become, who has become a contributor to the Web 2. So if you are a creator, thought leader, writer, author, podcaster, entrepreneur, small business owner, or freelancer, say I. Well, congratulations, you've been making the big tech very successful with your creations. There is probably nothing wrong with it since it's created tons of utility, but now people are more aware of how valuable our data is and how algorithms can be insensitive about our privacy and how they can hurt society with misinformation and how bias and discrimination these algorithms can get. Now, something else was happening during this time. What was it? These apps were so good in exchanging information and promoting our thoughts that we didn't care about who is the owner of this data that every one of us creates. That's the evolution of big tech companies that we all experience today. Now, the question is, do you want to own the data on the internet that you create? Let me ask that again. Do you want to own the data on the internet that you create? Welcome to Web3, my dear friends. That's Web3. So to recap, Web1 is readable, and it's all about accessibility. Guess which we are still working on after 30 years. Web2 is writable, and it's all about usability. And it looks like we are finally making progress after 15 years. Web3 is ownable, and it's all about ownability, which is still in its infancy stages, and we should be making the progress on it now. In fact, the term Web3 gained popularity and the meaning only in the last 2 years. Before Web3 became a term, the industry was shaping in the forms of blockchain, cryptocurrency, and NFTs. And no, they are not all the same. Similar to the Web2.com bubble, Web3 is also in a bubble right now. A few of the NFB members already recognize that. They are at the forefront of it. They joined my session yesterday. Some people are Reese, William, Andre, and Aaron. They all showed up to the session, and they are passionate about updating the basic protocols. The good news is that you, community, can define the rules in cryptocurrency. For example, why is alt text on these platforms limited to the number of characters? It's different number of characters on different social media platforms. So why is it limited? And why not there is an alt voice for describing art or an image on the web in the words and the voice of the creators? So before we dig deep, if you care about privacy and if you care about ownership of your data, say I. Friends, that's blockchain. If you care about the data making money for you and economic opportunities for you, say I. That's cryptocurrency. If you care about making that data useful to your community, say I. And that's NFTs. It's that simple. So how does blockchain help with the privacy? Think about it as every piece of the data that we add to the internet, like a social media post, a podcast, an article, has an associated ownership and ledger to keep track of. That's the new internet. How does cryptocurrency make money for you? Think about it as every piece of the data that you add to the internet carries an associated monetary value, normally referred to as tokens. When a group of people believe in currency, it can be used to trade goods or digital assets. Traditionally, the currencies are backed by the government. In the case of cryptocurrency, it's backed by people. It's the community, and it's a movement from people around the globe. Now you may ask, what are NFTs, Suman? Think about NFTs as goods that you exchange with cryptocurrency that is built on blockchain. So what is all this has to do with the blind community? Well, remember, it took many, many years of work and advocacy from the blind community for Web1 accessibility and Web2 usability. And the next wave is Web3 ownability, and it is happening right now. And I believe it's important for this community to have a seat on the table in the places that matters, to be at the forefront of this change, so it doesn't become another movement, but it's fundamentally designed with each and every one of you in mind. Web3 enables the future of consumer internet experiences such as metaverse, owning your creative content, and participating in economy upfront. Web3 is about privacy. It's about security. It's about independence, and it's about ease of use. We all have to be ahead in the game of this technology wave. Me, personally, I am building personal AI. where every person gets to create their own digital mind. The digital mind we create is nothing but an AI algorithm that is trained on all your data that you create. So far, we've been giving away all the data to big tech to benefit them, and I'm motivated to give that control of the data, utility of the AI, and monetary value created from that data back to the people. So if you are already an author, writer, podcaster, thought leader, you should create your own personal AI and create a community and switch that economic benefit back to you. A few people at NFB are creating a Discord community called Blind in Crypto. If you want to be part of the movement and if you want to be at the forefront of the crypto movement, specifically in the context of the blind, please join this group. Please enter your email at personal.ai/blind. Thank you.
On the road to independence, How My Seeing Eye Dog Allowed Me to Gain a New Perspective on Life by Old John Kulkarni. A photo appears on the page, the caption, Old John Kulkarni with his guide dog, Deputy. From the editor, Ojan is an active member of the National Federation of the Blind of Texas and serves as the first vice president of the Dallas chapter after faithfully providing services as its secretary. He is pursuing a master's degree in humanities from the University of Texas at Dallas, where a doctorate will round out preparation for a job teaching social studies. Ojan's research interests are Holocaust and human rights studies. Specifically, he is interested in the ways eugenics was used in the Second World War to persecute people with disabilities, since they were the first to be targeted by the Nazi regime. What he writes reminds me very much of my hopes and dreams when considering a guide dog. Here is what he has to say about his life, his mobility, and how he works to be independent. Being able to live a productive life is the greatest blessing a person can hope for, and it makes all the difference when that life is lived with dignity and self-confidence. Gaining this self-confidence not only requires staying motivated, but becoming equipped with the skills and tools necessary to achieve this goal. As a person with a visual impairment, I grew up as a person with high self-esteem, but I felt the need to enhance my ability to become even more confident when traveling to different places. This is where I held the belief that a guide dog would become useful because we would rely on each other when it came to navigating areas. The moment I have eagerly waited for came last year when I traveled to the Seeing Eye, located in Morristown, New Jersey, where I trained with my lifelong partner. The Seeing Eye is the oldest guide dog school in America, and since 1929, the year of its founding, it has demonstrated its commitment to the dignity of the blind by pairing us with a properly trained dog that is tailored to the needs of the person. I was no exception. I never imagined that I would welcome a four-legged furry friend into my life, given that training with a Seeing Eye dog requires proficient orientation and mobility skills. In other words, I would need to be able to judge traffic patterns when crossing streets, maintain a strong familiarity with my environment, and demonstrate the ability to determine my sense of direction in relation to it. The intense O&M training I went through over the years has paid off immensely in the end because I achieved the goal I set for myself, which was to become fully self-confident. I will never forget the very first day I met my Seeing Eye dog. A feeling of nervousness was constantly rushing inside of me, as I thought about how I would be able to manage the care of this dog, given that it requires so much effort and energy. More importantly, I thought about how it would gain a sense of trust, given that it was the first time I would encounter him. The true excitement came when the instructor walked into my room and introduced me to Deputy, saying, "John, this is your dog, my friend. Have fun." When I first petted Deputy, it was such a wonderful feeling. His body felt so warm to the touch, and a sense of joy kicked in as we began to bond with each other. When I first interacted with Deputy, we both felt hesitant. Since he was accustomed to working with his sighted instructor, he felt like a fish out of water when I placed the guiding harness on him. In fact, this is the case with all Seeing Eye dogs. When I gave him the three basic commands of forward, left, and right, he was constantly looking at the instructor and whimpering. I was told that it was normal for him to behave this way at first because we just met. However, his behavior changed after having worked with him for the first few days. I started to become familiar with him, and he began to better know and understand me. With the proper balance of affection and discipline, Deputy began to feel more comfortable and willing to work for me. In other words, we slowly became a team and started our long and productive relationship. During the 4 weeks I stayed at the Seeing Eye, my partner and I received intense training on various aspects of traveling outdoors. As the days passed, we were challenged to learn complex routes that involved various sidewalks, crossing multiple streets, and walking in areas with uneven layouts. My confidence grew each day because I had a partner to trust. As I directed him on where to go, he would lead the way. Being able to gain trust is such a powerful feeling to experience because I know I have something to rely on. This is especially the case when I am walking outside. I believe there are many advantages when working with a seeing eye dog. A cane is a very useful tool in identifying my surroundings, such as buildings, sidewalks, stairs, tactile landmarks, and other obstacles that may come my way. However, there are certain moments when a person has to make a decision. When using my cane to cross lighted intersections, I am not only responsible for judging traffic, but also deciding when it is safe to cross. In the same way, I have to figure out how to walk around objects based on the skills I have been taught. Having the dog by my side is a huge relief in these areas. While my job is to direct the dog, the rest relies on him, since he is responsible for leading me safely to my destination. It also makes all the difference when I am crossing the street, because if I tell my dog to go forward, he does not obey this command when he feels it is not safe to do so. Similarly, his assistance really comes into play when he guides me around objects, and I do not worry about bumping into them. Training with a seeing eye dog is the greatest decision I have made in my life, because not only do I feel more independent, but I am also experiencing companionship and a dog's unconditional love. Over the past year we have been together, our bond has grown immensely and continues to strengthen. Deputy is always ready to do his job and is a strong observer of his environment. In the same way, he is very attentive to my needs. I look forward to the many moments we will share over the years. This is a treasure that I will forever value and remember. The Honor Roll Call of States by Bridget Burke. A photo appears on the page, the caption, Bridget Burke. From the editor, Bridget is one of our unsung heroes. She watches the books so we can tend to the advocacy. She explains what makes good financial sense, and when that makes more work for us, she is the purveyor of bad and cumbersome news. The flip side is that she keeps us from trouble, and for this we can never express too much gratitude. Instead of reading the roll call of states as we have in the past, we decided this year to publish it here. This saves time on the floor and more broadly recognizes our chapters and divisions for their generosity and our understanding that we need funding at all levels to do our work. Here is our roll call. National Federation of the Blind of Alabama. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $1,500. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $1,500. SunShares Fund, $500. Wade Cain Fund, $1,000. National Federation of the Blind of Alaska. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $75. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $75. SunShares Fund, $75. Wade Cain Fund, $75. National Federation of the Blind of Arizona. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $1,200. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $1,200. SunShares Fund, $100. Wade Cain Fund, $1,200. National Federation of the Blind of Arkansas. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $75. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $375. SunShares Fund, $75. Wade Cain Fund, $150. National Federation of the Blind of California. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $600. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $600. SunShares Fund, $600. Wade Cain Fund, $600. National Federation of the Blind of Colorado. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $2,000. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $2,000. SunShares Fund, $2,000. Wade Cain Fund, $4,000. National Federation of the Blind of Connecticut. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $400. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $600. SunShares Fund, $300. Wade Cain Fund, $600. National Federation of the Blind of Delaware. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $50. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $50. SunShares Fund, $50. Wade Cain Fund, $50. National Federation of the Blind of Florida. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $250. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $250. SunShares Fund, $250. Wade Cain Fund, $250. National Federation of the Blind of Georgia. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $100. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $100. SunShares Fund, $100. White Cane Fund, $100. National Federation of the Blind of Hawaii. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $360. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $360. SunShares Fund, $360. White Cane Fund, $360. National Federation of the Blind of Idaho. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $350. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $350. SunShares Fund, $350. White Cane Fund, $350. National Federation of the Blind of Illinois. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $1,525. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $1,525. SunShares Fund, $525. White Cane Fund, $1,525. National Federation of the Blind of Indiana. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $125. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $125. SunShares Fund, $125. White Cane Fund, $125. National Federation of the Blind of Iowa. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $200. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $200. SunShares Fund, $200. White Cane Fund, $200. National Federation of the Blind of Kentucky. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $400. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $150. SunShares Fund, $150. White Cane Fund, $600. National Federation of the Blind of Louisiana. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $1,500. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $1,000. SunShares Fund, $1,000. White Cane Fund, $1,500. National Federation of the Blind of Maine. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $100. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $100. White Cane Fund, $100. National Federation of the Blind of Maryland. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $1,000. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $1,000. SunShares Fund, $1,000. White Cane Fund, $1,000. National Federation of the Blind of Massachusetts. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $300. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $300. SunShares Fund, $300. White Cane Fund, $300. National Federation of the Blind of Michigan. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $225. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $225. SunShares Fund, $225. White Cane Fund, $225. National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $455. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $405. SunShares Fund, $275. White Cane Fund, $1,625. National Federation of the Blind of Mississippi. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $300. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $300. SunShares Fund, $300. White Cane Fund, $300. National Federation of the Blind of Missouri. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $1,000. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $1,000. SunShares Fund, $500. White Cane Fund, $2,500. National Federation of the Blind of Montana. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $200. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $200. SunShares Fund, $200. White Cane Fund, $200. National Federation of the Blind of Nebraska. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $250. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $250. SunShares Fund, $250. White Cane Fund, $250. National Federation of the Blind of Nevada. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $200. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $200. SunShares Fund, $200. White Cane Fund, $200. National Federation of the Blind of New Hampshire. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $75. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $75. SunShares Fund, $75. White Cane Fund, $75. National Federation of the Blind of New Jersey. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $600. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $850. SunShares Fund, $600. White Cane Fund, $850. National Federation of the Blind of New Mexico. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $600. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $700. SunShares Fund, $600. White Cane Fund, $700. National Federation of the Blind of New York. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $500. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $500. SunShares Fund, $500. White Cane Fund, $500. National Federation of the Blind of North Carolina. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $250. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $300. SunShares Fund, $250. White Cane Fund, $300. National Federation of the Blind of Ohio. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $725. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $725. SunShares Fund, $725. White Cane Fund, $725. National Federation of the Blind of Oregon. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $500. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $300. SunShares Fund, $200. White Cane Fund, $500. National Federation of the Blind of Pennsylvania. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $600. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $500. SunShares Fund, $500. White Cane Fund, $600. National Federation of the Blind of Rhode Island. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $200. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $100. SunShares Fund, $50. White Cane Fund, $425. National Federation of the Blind of South Carolina. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $1,000. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $1,000. SunShares Fund, $1,260. White Cane Fund, $1,000. National Federation of the Blind of South Dakota. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $50. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $100. SunShares Fund, $50. White Cane Fund, $100. National Federation of the Blind of Tennessee. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $250. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $250. SunShares Fund, $250. White Cane Fund, $250. National Federation of the Blind of Texas. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $2,250. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $2,250. SunShares Fund, $750. White Cane Fund, $2,250. National Federation of the Blind of Utah. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $1,000. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $1,000. SunShares Fund, $1,000. White Cane Fund, $1,000. National Federation of the Blind of Vermont. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $25. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $25. SunShares Fund, $25. White Cane Fund, $25. National Federation of the Blind of Virginia. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $2,625. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $2,835. SunShares Fund, $2,785. White Cane Fund, $10,610. National Federation of the Blind of Washington. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $600. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $550. SunShares Fund, $550. White Cane Fund, $550. National Federation of the Blind of West Virginia. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $200. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $200. White Cane Fund, $200. National Federation of the Blind of Wisconsin. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $250. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $250. SunShares Fund, $250. White Cane Fund, $250. Thank you to our national divisions for supporting the funds of the National Federation of the Blind. National Organization of Blind Educators. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $50. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $50. SunShares Fund, $50. White Cane Fund, $50. National Federation of the Blind Community Service Division. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $500. SunShares Fund, $500. White Cane Fund, $500. Diabetes Action Network for the Blind. White Cane Fund, $300. National Federation of the Blind Human Services Division. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $100. White Cane Fund, $100. National Federation of the Blind Crafters Division. White Cane Fund, $100. National Federation of the Blind Merchants Division. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $1,000. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $1,000. SunShares Fund, $1,000. White Cane Fund, $5,000. National Association of Guide Dog Users Division. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $250. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $250. SunChairs Fund, $250. White Cane Fund, $250. National Organization of Professionals in Blindness Education. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $75. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $75. White Cane Fund, $75. National Federation of the Blind, Parents of Blind Children. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $500. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $500. SunShares Fund, $200. White Cane Fund, $500. National Federation of the Blind Performing Arts Division. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $50. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $50. SunShares Fund, $50. White Cane Fund, $50. National Federation of the Blind Science and Engineering Division. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $25. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $25. SunShares Fund, $25. White Cane Fund, $25. National Federation of the Blind Seniors Division. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $200. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $200. SunShares Fund, $200. White Cane Fund, $200. National Association of Blind Students. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $300. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $300. SunShares Fund, $300. White Cane Fund, $500. National Federation of Blind Veterans. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $250. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $250. SunShares Fund, $250. White Cane Fund, $250. National Federation of the Blind Writers Division. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $25. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $25. SunShares Fund, $25. White Cane Fund, $25. Total Fund Contributions. Jacobus Tenbrook Memorial Fund, $29,765. Kenneth Jernigan Fund, $29,350. SunShares Fund, $23,280. White Cane Fund, $48,720. Monitor Miniatures, news from the Federation family. Social Security announces 2023 cost of living adjustment. The Social Security cost of living adjustment, COLA, for 2023 is 8.7%. As a result, the 2023 Supplemental Security Income, SSI, federal benefit amount, which is currently $841, will now be $914. The average Social Security Disability Insurance, SSDI, benefit, which is currently $1,364, will increase to $1,483. The SSDI Substantial Gainful Activity, SGA, threshold for blind people, which is currently $2,260, will increase to $2,460. These increased benefits will be reflected in your January 2023 payment. A complete explanation of the 2023 Social Security changes will be included in the next issue of the Braille Monitor. Monitor Mart. The notices in this section have been edited for clarity, but we can pass along only the information we were given. We are not responsible for the accuracy of the statements made or the quality of the products for sale. Braille display for sale. My name is James, and I have a Brilliant BI-80 refreshable Braille display for sale. It has rarely been used. I have all cables, original box, and manuals. My asking price is $3,000, but would consider offers. Please email me at jakon22@gmail.com, or you may text or call me at 410-925-0707. NFB Pledge. I pledge to participate actively in the efforts of the National Federation of the Blind to achieve equality, opportunity, and security for the blind, to support the policies and programs of the Federation, and to abide by its constitution.